Ohio News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For more than a decade, New Hampshire has been a place where women politicians have broken new ground. In 1999, the Granite State was the first to have its top three state-level office holders all female, with then-Governor Jean Shaheen, House Speaker Donna Sitek, and Senate President Bev Hollingworth. About 10 years later, in 1998, the state Senate saw another first, with a majority of its members being female, 13 out of the 24. But last night, New Hampshire women passed yet another milestone, this time making U.S. history as the first state ever to send an all-female delegation to Congress, with the election of Democrats Carol Shea Porter in the first congressional district and Anne McLean Custer in the second. They'll join the state's two female U.S. senators, Jean Shaheen and Kelly Ayotte. Shea Porter, who held the first district seat for two terms, won over Republican Frank Ginta by a margin of about 3 percentage points. Shea Porter declared victory early this morning after an election night that saw results bounce up and down.
I'm so very, very honored that the people of the first district put their trust in me, and my pledge is to work very, very hard for everybody in a bipartisan manner. To go down there, create jobs, and start tackling some of the problems that we're facing. But you've heard me say many times before that we can do this. We can do this. So,
and in New Hampshire's second district, Anne McLean Custer, an attorney and Democratic activist, won over incumbent Republican Charlie Bass, a seat Custer came close to winning 2 years ago.
The people of the 2nd District of the state of New Hampshire and the kind of future that we want for our families, for our state, and for our country. And tonight, with your votes, you said loud and clear that New Hampshire wants to move forward.
In addition to this Year of the Woman for New Hampshire on Capitol Hill, the state voted in a female governor, Democrat Maggie Hassan, who easily beat Republican Over the Montaigne.
Through our work together, we will build a New Hampshire that is growing, a New Hampshire that is more competitive and economically dynamic, a New Hampshire that will ensure that all of its citizens can succeed, a New Hampshire that incorporates and honors the talents of all of our people.
Today in The Exchange, we wrap up the state results for you, and we want to hear from you, too, your reaction to yesterday's voting here in the Granite State and your hopes about how these newly elected leaders will move on from here. Give us a call. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. Our guests for the hour are Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH. He tweets at Granite Prof. Dante. I feel like we just saw each other. We were here for a long time last night. Thanks a lot for coming back in.
Good morning, Laura.
And Dean Spiliotis is also with us, Civic Scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the popular website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, same to you. You've been very generous with your time. Thanks a lot.
Hi, good morning, Laura.
Well, and gentlemen, we've heard all morning on Morning Edition about the presidential results. After predictions of a super tight race, lawyers at the ready in battleground states, possible reruns, some people were saying, of the contested 2000 Bush versus Gore election, President Obama clearly won last night, 303 Electoral College votes versus 206 for Mitt Romney. What do you think, Dean? How much did the president help out New Hampshire Democrats?
I think we're seeing a reasonable coattail effect here. I think this is something political scientists will look at in the coming months. I think the sense was, you know, Maggie Hassan had a very strong night in her run for governor. And I think that both her success against Over La Montaigne and President Obama's success in the state, you know, he won by about 5 percentage points, which is a little bit less than in 2008. But it wasn't as tight, I think, as we thought it would be. And I think that certainly helped as well. So, sure, I think there was a reasonable coattail effect here. I think it certainly helped Carol Shea Porter in that first CD, which we knew was going to be a very close race. And we may even be seeing some effects all the way down ballot in the state legislature, which typically happens when one party has a good showing in the state.
Although we don't have straight ticket voting anymore in New Hampshire. You don't just check one box,
right,
Republican or Democrat. You have to go down,
right,
down the whole ticket.
Yes, you have to put in a little bit of effort. We technically don't have straight ticket voting. But if you look at how, if you remember how the ballot was set up yesterday, you could essentially go down the column anyway and pick all the candidates from your party.
Yeah. What do you think? Coattails, Dante?
I mean, you know, certainly it was helpful for all the Democrats for Barack Obama to carry the state. But what's striking to me is that it's almost as if the last 4 years, or the last 2 years in particular, never happened in New Hampshire politics. And by that, I mean 2010, huge Republican year. Republicans win everything in sight. And people thought, well, maybe the state's turning back in a Republican direction. But Barack Obama last night in New Hampshire got 52% of the vote. Looks like he did a couple points better here than he did nationwide. That's basically the same result we got in 08. Obama won nationally and did a little better here. So we still have the same political complexion that we had 4 years ago, a Democratic tilting bellwether state.
Yeah, and I think one of the things to keep in mind here, and your colleague Andy Smith has mentioned this before, is that the demographic complexion of the voting electorate in that 2010 midterm was a little bit different than what we've seen in 2008 and 2012. That 2010 electorate was older and more conservative than what we saw in 08 and what we just saw yesterday. So I think that part of that, the 2010 sort of gave people the sense that the electorate was shifting, but really what we were seeing was kind of a portion of the larger electorate, which continues to lean Democratic overall.
And, you know, make no doubt about it, it's difficult for New Hampshire Republicans to get out of bed this morning. This was a winnable contest for them. They had a fairly strong candidate, Mitt Romney, at the top of the ticket, a New England Republican, and yet they lost not just the presidency, but the governorship, and it wasn't particularly close. They lost both congressional seats. Most of their 2010 gains have been evaporated. And so Republicans basically have to go back to the drawing board about after having the best night in decades 2 years ago. All of a sudden, they find themselves in what's becoming an increasingly familiar position, that of the minority.
Well, and I want to pick up on something you said, Dante, where a lot of these big races we were watching weren't that close after months and months of talk about how much of a squeaker it was going to be. Maggie Hassan won easily over the Montaigne, Carol Shea Porter, 3 percentage points over Frank Ginta, not super far apart, but not a squeaker. I mean, we thought it could be as much as, you know, 0.5% or 1% either way. And in the second district, Ann McLean Custer, again, 5 percentage points over Charlie Bass, a reasonable margin. So not as close as a lot of people thought it would be.
Yeah, my colleague Andrew Smith at the UNH Survey Center, in his final poll, one thing that leaped out at me was how poorly the Republicans were doing among women voters once she got beyond Mitt Romney. Ovid LaMontagne, but also Charlie Bass, Frank Ginta, they were only pulling about a third of female voters in New Hampshire, according to the UNH poll. And we don't know, I'm not sure what the exit polls finally looked like, but that was a number that corresponds with the results last night, to be sure.
Wow, interesting. Dean, the year of the woman.
Yeah, I think if we talk about it at the state, obviously at the national level, I think Barack Obama, the gender gap this time was about 12%. So for all the discussion that Mitt Romney was closing the gap nationally by recouching women's issues as an economic issue, I think in the end we ended up with sort of a fairly straightforward, typical Democratic favorability for gender gap. At the state level, as I've said several times, I think Maggie Hassan did a great job of neutralizing the tax issue by taking the pledge and then pinning Ovid LaMontagne down on terrain that he didn't want to be on, which was contraception, choice, gay marriage, women's health issues. And I think that in part accounts for the movement towards her and her large margin of victory.
Our phone number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. We'd love your reaction to yesterday's voting. your thoughts on what happened, your hopes for how these newly elected leaders will move forward, both nationally, in Congress, and here in the Granite State. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Dante Scala, while Dean was talking about, again, this big success for women here in the Granite State, you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, again, it'll be interesting to see what lessons the New Hampshire Republican Party takes from last night. Because for the governor's race, establishment Republicans rallied early around a socially conservative candidate, Ovid Lamontagne. Social conservative, fiscal conservative. That candidate got less than 45% of the vote. And again, in a year in which, I mean, the president did well. He got 52%, a good night. But the governor, Hassan, outperformed President Obama. And so now going forward, the question is, you know, you look at Democrats. They've won the governor's seat 8 out of the last 9 races.
Wow.
This formula of taking moderate stances on fiscal issues, liberal stances on social issues, is trumping what the Republicans put forward a lot more often than not, especially when they put a socially conservative candidate at the top of the ticket or near it.
And this is the Gene Shaheen, John Lynch template for how to be kind of a centrist governor in a state that is fiscally conservative but socially increasingly progressive.
Again, 9 out of the last 10 governor's races. When you put it that way, Dante.
8 out of 9. Yep.
Excuse me, 8 out of 9. So Gene Shaheen, Craig Benson, and then Lynch. Lynch, 4 years,
four years
of
Lynch,
Governor
right.
Lynch. Again, that number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Quickly back to you, Dean Spiliotis, because you were talking about the first congressional district. That's the one place especially where Republicans thought they'd do well, given that that district tends to lean more Republican.
Absolutely. I mean, right. And I think we've said all along that, you know, Carol Shea Porter and Frank Ginta, that it was going to be a fairly close race. The two of them, it was a fairly kind of predictable sort of conservative versus progressive kind of race, very similar to sort of national races we've seen around the country. And there was a sense that, you know, if Barack Obama and Maggie Hassan performed well enough, that would give Carol Shea Porter a little bit of an added boost. But it is true that typically when we talk about the two congressional districts, that first district does lean more Republican. But Frank Ginta had kind of a mixed record, and I think that hurt him as well.
Real quick, Dante.
Well, you know, let me get back to after the break. But the Libertarian candidate in the first district got 4% of the vote.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. And so that was a factor. Not the factor, but a factor.
All right. Well, lots more to talk about after a break. And we'll hear from you, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. More of our election wrap-up on The Exchange on NHPR and the Tanila Diane Reem Show, a look at last night's presidential election results. You have a unique set of experiences and expertise, and NHPR would like to have you help us with our news coverage. Join our Public Insight Network and let us know which stories we should consult you on. Find out more about PIN at nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather, we have a winter weather advisory in effect for this afternoon tonight. Thickening cloudiness, some light rain and snow developing across southern New Hampshire by late today. Highs from 37 to 42 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire with locations in Nashua and Pelham. Details at collinsdentistry.com. And the Altus Investment Group, offering fee-only investment management and financial planning advice to individuals and small businesses in central New Hampshire. ALTUSinvest.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at last night's election results, and we want your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on the Exchange page or on our Facebook page. We'll want your reaction to yesterday's voting. We'd like to hear your hopes for how the newly elected leaders will move forward. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. 7-7. Political analysts Dean Spiliotis and Dante Scala are with me in studio. And we go now briefly to Dave Scanlon, Deputy Secretary of State in New Hampshire. His office oversees our state elections. And Dave Scanlon, a late night. I appreciate you taking the time for us this morning.
Well, good morning, Laura. It was a late night. There were heavy crowds that turned out to vote yesterday. And any problems that we saw at the polling place were related to long lines and people getting frustrated. But it was something that we expected. The local election officials did what they could to move lines as efficiently as possible through the polling place. And there really were not any significant problems outside of the lines at yesterday's election.
And we talked last night, Dave, but just to reiterate, please, what was the final turnout number?
Well, we're actually working on those numbers right now, along with all of the other official returns from the race. But the early indications are that Secretary Bill Gardner's prediction of 722,000 is probably in line with what we're going to see when the dust finally settles.
Yeah, and that's a lot. 722,000 people voting in a state of just 1.3 million. It's pretty impressive, Dave.
Well, it's New Hampshire consistently has a high percentage turnout compared to other states around the country. Part of that is due to the fact that we conduct probably more elections than most other states, given all of the local elections, county, state, federal offices that we have. And our electorate really is engaged, especially when we have races that are contested like they were this time around.
Do you have any races that you're still counting, Dave?
We have just started the process of counting all of the races, but we received the official returns of votes from the towns by the state police at 7 o'clock this morning. And we have many crews in our office right now that are starting to work on the official results for every race that appeared on the ballot. And we'll start giving the official results later today for the major offices. And then the offices for state rep, county offices, we hope will be available sometime tomorrow.
And again, Dave, were there any problems related to the new voter ID law? People didn't have to show an ID last night to vote, but they were certainly encouraged to.
Yeah, that process actually went very, very well. And we did spend a lot of time training local election officials on the new law from the summer right through the day of the election. The state press and media really helped us out by getting the word out in the days before the election that this law was in effect and what voters should expect. By far, most voters presented an ID, and there were very few issues with people protesting the law that was in effect.
So in the end, Dave, the final takeaway for you, obviously not in terms of the politics of these elections, but how they went and how they were run.
I think the elections ran incredibly well, given the turnout that showed up yesterday. We owe that in large part to the 4,000 to 6,000 local election officials that are the ones that really are on the ground conducting the elections. They were prepared, and in most instances, they did their jobs incredibly well.
All right. Dave Scanlon, thanks a lot. We'll let you get back to work there at the Secretary of State's office.
Yep, bye.
That's Dave Scanlon again, Deputy Secretary of State, giving us an update on the count, the official count, as he said, now underway, and the turnout, about 722,000 Granite Staters coming out to the polls yesterday. We're getting your reaction this morning to last night's voting. Our number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us an email, too, if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And, gentlemen, let's take some calls. Renee joins us from Contoocook. Hi, Renee. You're on the air. Go ahead.
I just feel that I have one answer to why Republicans did so badly in New Hampshire. And it's Bill O'Brien, Bill O'Brien, Bill O'Brien. I think that he motivated a lot of women, angry women, angry people, to get out there and make sure that Republicans have less power. And I know all Republicans aren't Bill O'Brien, but he's got a lot of power, and he scared a lot of people.
Renee, thanks a lot for calling in. This sure was a factor in this race, Dean Spiliotis, more so than in any other election that I've covered, and I've covered a lot. You don't usually hear about the Speaker of the House in a state election.
That's right. I know Speaker O'Brien has been controversial. He's received some criticism for tying the state legislative agenda too closely into the National Tea Party's agenda. He's going to be dealing with a reduced majority. We know over in the Senate, where Peter Bragdon has been president, they're looking at potentially a 12-12 split up from a 19-5 majority for Republicans. On the House side, Speaker O'Brien is going to be dealing with a reduced majority. He lost his majority leader last night. Pete Silva was defeated, as was Stephen Stepanak, who's the chairman of the powerful House Ways and Means Committee. So,
but hold on, Dean. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Bill O'Brien may have won his seat, but he may not be elected.
Well,
Speaker.
Absolutely right. That's the punchline that I was getting to. Is, right? If he's assuming he's Speaker, he's going to have reduced majorities. He lost a couple of his lieutenants. We will see. We will see whether or not House Republicans will be willing to let him continue as Speaker. Maybe not.
Wow. Thanks, Renee, for the call. Dante.
Yeah, and Renee makes good. The exit polls back up Renee's point. Maggie Hassan drew support from women. Two-thirds of unmarried women backed Hassan yesterday. She also wound up slightly ahead among married women. If you had told me at the beginning of this year that among the issues on the front burner in New Hampshire politics in 2012 would be things like access to contraception, and that we would see issues, you know, Planned Parenthood, controversy surrounding Planned Parenthood were a big issue in New Hampshire politics this year. Typically, when, you know, look back to 2010, when we're talking about fiscal issues, the scope and scale of government, Republicans tend to have good years because New Hampshire voters have that small government bias. But when the mix of issues shifts and we're talking more about social issues, abortion, gay marriage, even contraception, then that small government tilt that New Hampshire voters has goes the other way toward the Democrats.
Well, and let's talk a little bit more about that Democratic race. We were told early on that it would be close, but in the end it was not close at all. This was the fourth run for Mr. LaMontagne, the fourth run for state office. And when he spoke last night to supporters, the disappointment was palpable.
It looks like tonight is not going to be our night based on the numbers that we're seeing right now. And I'm disappointed in that, obviously. I'm disappointed in the way this night ended after weeks of those negative attack ads distorting you and me. Because it wasn't just a negative attack against me. It was a negative attack against our entire team, which includes you. New Hampshire's a better state than that. And New Hampshire needs to be a better state than that going forward.
So, Dean Spiliotis, is this the last we've seen of Ovid LaMontagne? He's been a figure of New Hampshire politics off and on for a decade and a half.
That's right. It may very well be his last run for elective office. I don't know necessarily that we will no longer see him as a player within the Republican Party. You know, it turns out now, in hindsight, his moment was that Senate primary loss to Kelly Ayotte. If he had won that primary in 2010, it's a very good chance he would be a U.S. senator right now. You know, Ovid is known for having a good temperament, and he seemed obviously disappointed and a little bit bitter. You know, but these outside ads that attacked him, that's the nature of the beast. Everybody had to deal with those, including Maggie Hassan, who was hit by a number of outside groups. So that's an occupational hazard at this point. If you're going to run for elective office, you have to be able to deal with that.
Dante.
And again, I mean, you know, certainly both sides take liberties with ads and so forth, but ads don't necessarily stick the way they did to Ovid LaMontagne if there isn't something there. And the fact is, LaMontagne is perhaps the best known socially conservative candidate in his party. And Democrats took advantage of that, frankly.
Joining us now on the phone is Patrick Griffin, longtime media consultant, including in Republican politics. His clients have included numerous U.S. senators, members of Congress, and governors. He also served as a media advisor to both Bush presidents. And Patrick, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura. I've been eating crow most of the morning, so there may be a little stuck in my teeth here, but
Well, and Dante Scala said earlier, if you're a New Hampshire Republican, it's hard to get out of bed this morning. What do you think, Patrick?
Well, I think it is hard to get out of bed, but, you know, those of us who don't learn from these elections, I always say when I do campaigns, when I win, I've done everything right. When you lose, it causes introspection, and it is clearly time in the Republican Party, not just in New Hampshire, but around the country, to examine the brand very carefully and spend some introspective time looking at what happened last night, looking at the message voters sent, because this truly was an historic election. But this president, a Democratic president, when we go back and look historically at FDR, at LBJ, Bill Clinton, lots of Democratic presidents haven't served two terms. So that was historic. But the margin by which the president won, and under the meteorological conditions, literally, and the economic conditions this president faced, is stunning. Essentially, what we saw was a population that was prepared to turn its back on the Romney message, the Republican message about taxes and the deficit, America's place in the world, even the price of gasoline. They were willing to turn their back on that and basically say, no, I'm concerned about other things. And I'm concerned about those things, but frankly, I'm satisfied enough that they're changing. It's clear to me that the use of the term or the word Reagan Revolution, or Ronald Reagan, who's one of my great heroes, is 30-year-old stuff.
You know, Patrick, if I could jump in, you said you always talk about defeats are a chance to learn, and you said Republicans need to reexamine the brand. What do you mean by that, Patrick? Do you mean specifically just how the message is presented, or actually changing the substance of the message itself, changing real policy?
No, I think this is about demographics, Laura. It really is. The demographics have got to come first. If you're trying to sell, something to voters or consumers, this is no different for my commercial clients. When you're trying to sell something and the market says that's not what we want, you better work to sort of fine-tune the brand and figure out what people do want. And so I do think one of the first things the party's got to do is look at demographics, fundamental demographics, women, Latinos. Taking a look at the various coalitions that the president was able to convince needed to be with him. And remember one last point. You know, you cannot put a winning coalition together by making lists of people you don't like. This goes back to Lee Atwater when I was doing the first President Bush campaign, that big tent thing. We better find that big tent. We better figure out and triage what our priorities are, because it's getting hard to get the key economic messages through because of the social stuff.
And let's talk a little bit about that more, Patrick, if we could. It was a good night for supporters of gay marriage, with the first openly gay U.S. senator going in. What would you advise your party to do? Is it time to walk away from that socially conservative message against gay marriage, against abortion, some concerns about contraceptive coverage and so forth? Is it time to walk away from that or not?
Well, I feel very strongly, Laura, that the Republican Party's message of economic prosperity and economic responsibility, particularly when it comes to the sequester and some of the things that this president, this Congress are going to face immediately today, that the Republican message is strong there, but it has clearly been affected by those issues you just mentioned.
Especially over the Montaigne. Would you agree with that, Patrick?
What's that? I'm sorry?
Especially over the Montaigne, affected by those
messages. Yeah, and I think that, you know, you're not going to change minds over abortion, guns, gay marriage, certainly not women's rights. I mean, this was it's very important to be inclusive, principled but inclusive. But at the same time, when you start talking about giving people personal freedom, Laura, and then you say, except, you know, in your bedroom, or except as it applies to this, or except... We have defeated the purpose of, I think, the Republican Party brand, which is to essentially say there are certain things that need to be extraordinarily important to us, and we need to fight for those things, and there are other things that we are never going to win no matter who the candidate is. And again, you know the old line. People who what's the line? Those who continue to repeat history, I'm trying to remember the line. Those who don't learn from history
are doomed to repeat it. That's the one.
That's right. Thank you. It's been a long night.
Our brains are all a little fuzzy, Patrick. One more question, if I could, please. I have heard that you did a lot of the media messages for Congressman Bass. Is that right, Patrick?
That is true. We did handle Charlie's campaign.
So were you involved in that famous tap dancing ad? Because that got a lot of attention, where there was an Anne McClain Custer-like actress and as the ad said, tap dancing away from her liberal record, again, according to the ad.
Yes, we're responsible for that ad, and I think that the attempt in that particular ad was to try to cut through in a swing state like New Hampshire an extraordinarily high amount of clutter, to do it in a way that was funny. But again, when you do this stuff, you have to be very, very careful not to be offensive. And the question I'm asked by a lot of people today is, was that ad a problem? Annie has indicated that she believes that ad was offensive. What was indicated to her by people was offensive. I can tell you in our testing and in our internal polling, this race was decided late. It was decided as part of a jet stream that pushed every single Democrat, and certainly just about the Northeast. There are no more Republicans left here that were up last night. So, yes, we did the ad. I think the ad was successful. I think Ann McLean Custer and certainly Carol Shea Porter benefited from the jet stream of Obama-Hassan in the state of New Hampshire.
Well, Patrick Griffin, thank you very much for your time. Again, I know it's a super busy time for you. Thanks for giving us a couple minutes.
Always good to be with you, Laura. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. That's Patrick Griffin, again, longtime media consultant, especially in Republican politics here in the Granite State. Dante Scala, his comments about eating crow were interesting, and his comments about the jet stream of Democrats here in New England.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see. I mean, we certainly saw over the last week President Obama actually opening up a tiny national lead, and we saw Hassan in New Hampshire opening up actually a wider lead than Obama had. So there might have been some of that late movement. It was very interesting. Pat Griffin is obviously a very seasoned observer of New Hampshire politics and Republican politics. And the line that stuck out to me from what he said was, we can't let our message get basically cluttered because of the social stuff. 2016 is not that far away. New Hampshire is going to have a front row seat to what the National Republican Party does next. Who's going to be the next face of the Republican Party, and who is that going to be? Is it going to be more of a moderate like Chris Christie, or is the lesson going to be we need someone more conservative than Mitt Romney, more true to conservative principles going forward?
Well, and Dante, you well remember in the Republican primary, that moderate face was John Huntsman, former governor of Utah, and he got clobbered.
Absolutely. And remember what happened to Bill Binney in the 2010 U.S. Senate race against Kelly Ayotte and Ovid Lamontagne. Binney finished far, far back. And that's the dilemma for New Hampshire Republicans in a nutshell, is that Patrick Griffin's voice is a minority voice in his own party right now, because social conservatives, evangelicals, et cetera, they're not going away. And the Republicans can't afford to lose them right now. So they're really in a bind.
Right. Yeah. As Dante and I have discussed, there may have been a jet stream effect, but there are these underlying structural issues within the Republican Party that Pat Griffin raised them in his comments. We're going to see whether or not he can deal with them. Sometimes you get this reaction that says that, well, the problem was the candidates weren't true conservatives. But I think there's going to be an internal battle within the party.
All right. Lots more calls, gentlemen, after a short break. So if you're on the line, stay there and keep it right here.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and the New Hampshire Institute of Politics and Political Library at St. Anselm College, New Hampshire's home for politics, online at anselm.edu/NHIOP. And Raff Young and Pignatelli, celebrating 25 years of innovative client-focused solutions for businesses and nonprofits throughout New England, rafflaw.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Kate McNally inviting you to join us for the Folk Show on Sunday nights here on the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio. It's mostly acoustic music, bluegrass, Celtic, traditional folk, and new music too. We also feature live performances and feature albums during the 9 o'clock hour. Join us for the Folk Show Sunday nights, 7 to 10 p.m. here on the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, reactions to the election results nationally and statewide. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Dean Spiliotis and Dante Scala, two longtime political analysts here with us at NHPR. Gentlemen, tons of calls, lots of emails. I'll try to get through some of the emails right now. This is Matt in Deerfield, who says, this morning it looks like question one, banning an income tax, passed, but question three, calling for a constitutional convention, failed. Without a constitutional convention, can the results of question one even be implemented? Let's take a big, giant step back here. And thanks, Matt, for raising those issues. But Dean Spiliotis, there were three ballot questions. As I understand the numbers I have, all of them failed.
That's right. And I think the clarification there is that in order to pass an amendment, you need a two-thirds majority of voters. So I believe the income tax amendment got 57% support, roughly. That does not clear the two-thirds threshold. So that actually did not pass, nor did either of the other amendments. And listeners have to keep in mind that in our state, the amendment process begins in the state legislature. So to the extent that this is a Republican state legislature, these are Republican initiatives. So I think that's why you saw all three of them go down together, kind of in keeping with the Democratic gains made.
All right, and here's another email. This is from Jean. Do your guests have thoughts on the super PACs in this race? In particular, I'm wondering about their thoughts on American Crossroads, Karl Rove's organization, and how it did or did not affect the race. And Jean, thank you for joining us with that email. Dante.
Well, I think there are a lot of wealthy donors allied with the Republican Party right now who are calling people like Karl Rove, wondering why their money was not better spent. You look not nationally, okay? President Obama, despite taking on a lot of attacks from super PACs. Now, granted, the president's campaign raised a lot of money on its own, so that roughly washed out. But look at all the U.S. Senate races where Republicans failed to make gains nationally. They kept the House of Representatives, but in the Senate, where they had what looked like an opportunity to take the majority, they failed. So these super PACs, for all the talk about how influential they were going to be, didn't seem to have the effect that their donors intended to have, to be sure.
And Gene, it's a question a lot of people are asking this morning.
Yeah, and I think at a minimum it's going to raise questions about the role of traditional advertising, whether it's super PAC advertising or candidate advertising on television. You know, we really are moving into a new period of campaign organization driven by technology, the internet, social media had a huge impact this time around. And you saw the Obama team with this amazing kind of micro-targeting grassroots get-out-the-vote operation, the likes of which we've never seen before. And that was in the face of all the money spent by Romney, and it didn't make a difference in the end.
Interesting. So boots on the ground in the end.
In a very high-tech way, yes.
Okay, let's take another call. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. John's waiting in Hanover. Hi, John. Thanks for hanging on, and you're on the air.
Morning.
Morning.
The medium is saying that the two groups that supported the Republicans, or mostly supported the Republicans, were old people and white people. New Hampshire, as far as I know, is one of the oldest states and one of the whitest states. How come Republicans didn't do better?
You know, John, that is a great question. What do you think, Dante?
Well, you know, one factor, again, not to harp on this point, but gender played a big role in this election. In addition, you look at the electorate and on some of the more controversial parts of the Obama administration, people were at best ambivalent. You know, for instance, voters were split on Obamacare. Those who favored keeping it in place or expanding it about even with those who favored repealing it. I think one key factor of the Obama coalition here in New Hampshire is young voters, but also college-educated voters.
And New Hampshire has a high population of college-educated people.
Yeah, exactly. And I think those factors helped, especially among women, helped Obama last night.
Well, I appreciate John looking at the demographics, Dean, because a lot of people are doing that this morning, and he's right. New Hampshire's older and whiter, but the woman vote, again, is a big factor here.
Right, and it's also more educated and more affluent. You have to look at the demographics of the kinds of senior citizens who are retiring here. You know, New Hampshire has this reputation as being fiscally conservative, which is good. No state income tax, good for retirement, but it's also socially more progressive and has a lot of cultural opportunities and recreational opportunities. So it may not simply be old people and white people as single categories. You have to look at the kinds of people who are coming here to retire.
Well, and Jim Demers is with us now. He's co-chair of the Obama campaign in New Hampshire, also president of the firm Demers and Blaisdell. And Jim Demers, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you this morning.
Well, what do you think is the takeaway for your party here in New Hampshire after last night's pretty successful results?
Well, I think, first of all, this was an election where women played a significant role. And you could almost sense back in January when the primary was taking place here that women were going to be the deciding factor in this election. When Rick Santorum and the Republicans started the discussion not only about abortion but contraception, a lot of people said it just feels like we've moved back into the 1950s. And that teed it up for a big block of votes to become very energized. Then we've had, you know, the discussions about eliminating Planned Parenthood, you know, Washington deciding whether what a woman will do with her body. And I think that as the debates went on, we heard about gender inequality when it comes to the workforce. And I think that really did play a significant part in the outcome last night in not only the presidential race, but it just rippled through the whole ballot here.
And Jim, hold on if you could. I think Dante Scala wants to ask you a question.
Hi, Jim. Dante Scala here. You've known President Obama now for most of the past decade. You've seen numerous Obama campaigns in New Hampshire. What, in terms of the campaign operations, what made this one, this cycle, different from, say, 2008, either the primary or the general?
Well, first, I am as happy as most people across the country that it's over and we won't see another ad for a while, because this was oversaturation for political advertising on both sides. And the outside groups was, you know, just shocking how much money was pumped into these elections. But it, what was most amazing is the Obama grassroots organization had been organizing in New Hampshire for almost 2 years. And really, they never stopped after the last election. They had people on the ground here. They had Organizing for America, which ultimately transferred over to becoming the reelection effort. But what really amazed me is how the campaign was able to take sort of modernized grassroots campaigning. They were able to micro-target segments of votes. And I came across a woman 2 weeks ago who said to me, I don't know how the campaign did it, but I moved from Massachusetts to New Hampshire 6 months ago. I'm not registered. Somebody knocked on my door and asked who I was going to vote for. I told them I'm not registered, and she said, I know. I have it marked right here, and you can register same day. I mean, they
wow.
had figured out how to micro-target voters right down to getting a huge number of people registered who had been registered before but either fell off the ranks or had moved into the state. So,
Jim, if I could
just
ask you,
very impressive.
Yeah, if I could just ask you one last question. Governor-elect Maggie Hassan ran in part against what she called the Tea Party legislature, but it looks like at least the New Hampshire House will remain Republican. So how is Ms. Hassan going to have to change her tune? She's going to have to work with these folks if she wants her agenda to be accomplished.
Well, actually, the latest results I'm hearing is that the House may have gone Democratic.
Really?
Yeah.
You've got later results than I do then.
Yeah, I just talked to two people a few minutes ago who said that they think the Democrats may have actually taken control of the House. Now, in looking at some of the tallies, we could probably have 50, 60 recounts coming because races are so close for these House seats. But, yeah, there's a feeling that the Democrats actually did take the House last night.
Do you have any numbers on the Senate? I know we're still waiting for one race that might tip the balance, Jim.
It looks like it's 11 to 12, with one race that's practically guaranteed a recount will be coming, and that's the Sanborn Nyquist race. But so it looks 11 to 12, with one that's going to be up in the air until they finish counting next week.
So 11 Democrats and 12 Republicans so far in the state Senate. Is that what you're telling us?
Right, yes.
Okay. Jim, thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us.
You're very welcome.
That's Jim Demers, again, co-chair of the Obama campaign in New Hampshire. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, an email from Margie gets to what we were just talking to Jim Demers about. Margie asks, has the composition of the Republican representatives in the State House changed? Will the influence of the Tea Party and Free State movements be as significant as it was this past term? And what is the likelihood that Bill O'Brien will continue as majority leader? Let's update Margie as much as possible, gentlemen, on the status at the State House. Dante, and then Dean?
Well, Speaker O'Brien won't be the majority leader if he doesn't have a majority to lead,
right.
For one. Two, you know, one group that actually seemed to do pretty well among Republicans this year was were pro-gay marriage Republicans. Outside money came in to help those Republicans who decided to defend the gay marriage law as opposed to attack it. So that group did well. And what I'm curious about, it's a good question about the composition. Who were the Republicans who are going to return to the legislature? And are they less conservative than the 2010 version?
Is this the return of the moderates in terms of Republicans?
I mean, are they still out there? Are there such things left in New Hampshire? We're going to find out.
Well, and some of them got primaried by more
exactly.
Tea Party Republicans. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, actually, a fair number were primaried by Tea Party Republicans because the primary is a whole separate dynamic from a general election. If Jim Demers is right, then and the House is going to flip Democratic, then the Jim O'Brien question, the Bill O'Brien question is moot. The bigger issue is going to be whether or not more moderate Republicans, to the extent that they're still out there, some of whom voted against the repeal of gay marriage, will be further emboldened to kind of have this internal discussion in the party about what the agenda should be and maybe to detach it a little bit or decouple it a little bit from the National Tea Party agenda.
Well, and Margie, thanks for the email. And NHPR will be following this. So we couldn't answer it. All your questions this morning, but the numbers are still coming in. As Dave Scanlon said, the counting officially begins. So stay with us, Margie, for more on that. Let's take another call. This is Dan in Farmington. Hi, Dan. Thanks for waiting. You're on The Exchange.
Hi, good morning. I'll try to be brief because I know we're short on time.
Sure.
I see a continued reaction in the Republican Party. Full disclosure, I'm a ticket-splitting independent, so I have no horse in this race particularly. But it's an issue of every time we see a defeat on the Republicans nationally, and you're also starting to see this locally and statewide, both in New Hampshire and in other local races, where they tend to take a reaction of, well, the candidate wasn't a true conservative, and they want to insulate themselves further and become more extremely and hidebound far to the right conservative. And I think this election was a pretty sound referendum on that idea that more extreme conservatism and further to the right is not the right direction for the Republican Party as a whole.
This was something that you talked about earlier, Dante Scala. Go ahead, touch on that again if you could.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, think about Charlie Bass in the 2nd Congressional District. If his political career is effectively over, if he's not going to run for re-election, who's likely to take his place to run against Ann Custer in 2014? Is it likely that we would get another, you know, Republican who takes a moderate stance on at least some issues? Or is it more likely to be a down-the-line conservative? That's a key question going forward.
Dean.
Yeah, I think the fundamental problem is, have we reached a point where the dynamics of selection within the primary process are fundamentally different from the dynamics of how candidates perform in the general election? So you have these kinds of conservative bloodlettings in the Republican primary process, and then you get to a general election in which sort of the kind of median position on the issues is very different. So it's something that the party is going to have to deal with in terms of vetting its candidates in a way to make them more competitive to keep up with the changing demographics in the state.
I mean, and there are some moderate Republicans still out there. I mean, look at, for instance, State Senator Nancy Stiles, who successfully defended her seat out on the seacoast against Bev Hollingworth last night. So there are Republicans who kind of are out of line with the National Party, frankly, but had some success. You know, one other thing to mention, Democrats are having all this success in a new map that was heavily gerrymandered by the state Republican Party at the executive council level, state Senate level, state House level. Republicans were in charge of redrawing all the maps. They drew them, of course, as Democrats would, in their favor, and they lost anyway.
Wow, so that makes the sting even more stingy, Dante. Mm,
yes, it does.
Well, it's interesting, and as we look at this group of Democrats moving into office, and again, we know Maggie Hassan is the new governor. We're not quite sure what the balance of power is in the state legislature. But, you know, it's been said, Dean, we've seen these swings in New Hampshire back and forth, and it's been said that when the Democrats came in a big way, you know, they kind of overreached on their agenda, so voters rejected them in 2010. The Republicans came in. A lot of talk about how they overreached on their agenda.
What do you think these new Democrats are going to be thinking as they enter office that, you know, don't get too excited, don't overreach?
Yeah, that really is. I mean, that's human nature. We've seen that for years at the presidential level as well. Whenever you have unified government, either, you know, a governor and a state legislature of the same party or a president and a Congress of the state party, you know, you initially kind of start out trying to figure out where the common ground is to sort of get off the mark quickly. But inevitably, these kind of internal ideological divisions pop up and they cause all kinds of problems. And, you know, history is full of presidents who had more trouble with kind of unified government in their own party, dealing with these internal divisions in their own party, than in working with a party across the aisle. So we'll see. I mean, but it is absolutely, if that House flips to the Democrats or and the Senate as well, or even close to unified government, it's going to be a pitfall for sure.
Dante.
And again, we'll be dealing with, it won't be like 06 or like 10, because if there are majorities in the House and the Senate, they're going to be very narrow ones.
This isn't quite the wave that we saw in 2010 or 2006.
Well,
strong for Democrats, but not these giant, giant waves.
I mean, it reflects the state itself. I mean, we're roughly, we're a 52-48 kind of state, and we're getting a 52-48 kind of result up and down the ticket.
All right. Well, I want to close out on that note with an email from John in Laconia who says, want to regain power and respect? This is his message to Republicans. Then spend the next 2 years cooperating, not fighting. John says, I was disgusted when last night, not 30 minutes after the presidential election was called, some Republican strategists were already using the fight language and looking forward to 2014. John says, all of our members of government need to live in 2012. Not 2014. People will respect cooperation and bipartisanship above all else now. We'll be talking about that tomorrow in The Exchange. Dean, any hopes that we will see what John wants?
We'll see. That's most polling data suggests that's what voters want, but typically political elites don't necessarily come along quietly.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time again with our coverage last night and for joining me bright and early this morning. Dean Spiliotis, thank you very much.
Sure, Laura. My pleasure.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. Dante Scala, again, you've been a trooper. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome, Laura.
Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH. He tweets at Granite Prof. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.